The Football Show on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Football Show this evening. Keith Andrews will join us to talk about bad footballer diets, frankly. We'll have Tim Vickery talking to us about the Copa Libertadores, where it seems Argentinian and Brazilian sides are reclaiming some lost ground. And we have Dan McDonald in studio. Hello.
Hi, Joe.
So, Matt Doherty is the reason. I spoke to Keith Andrews earlier on. Matt Doherty, first question his manager, Espirito Santo, asked him was, what's your body fat percentage? And Matt Doherty thought, that's not a good question to be asked. And with good reason. His diet consisted largely of pasta, microwavable meals, sweets and fizzy drinks. So he's down to very lean and healthy, 86.5 kgs. At his heaviest, he reckons he was up to 92.
Wow, that's surprising. Like 92 is pretty...
14 stone.
Yeah, plus, he's not like an unbelievably tall player, you know, so you're explaining that with his frame, you know.
Yeah, so he's had to cut it all out. And this was as recently as June 2017. It's extraordinary stuff.
Well, think about Matt, like, and you speak to people who worked with him along the way that... I mean, even people who really rate him as a player, but they wouldn't have necessarily regarded him as like this amazing pro. He could sort of annoy people at times, you know, just with his manner at times, and I think his punctuality at one of his clubs was an issue. But I mean, that's irrelevant. He's got his act together and we're seeing the rewards.
So let's start with the big one, Dan. 1860 Munich against Sonnenhof.
Well, this is my weekend football. I went to Bosland Dock on Friday. There was a couple of German lads there because there's always tourists going to games at Dalyman Park, and a lot of them are Germans because, you know, the Germans just have a fantastic attitude to attending football. They love going to football. So I was over in Munich for a stag at the weekend.
I didn't realise, that there were German contingents going to Dalyman, or that tourists are always going to Dalyman.
Oh, big time, yeah, big time.
Because Dalyman's... famous stadium?
Well, Dalyman's a famous stadium. It's just because people are in Dublin on a Friday night and they're lads on a trip and they think, let's go to a game.
It's weird Dubliners don't have that attitude.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, that's it. I find that annoying as well.
Anyway, let's not turn this into a League of Ireland bitching session.
Well, I mean, ironically, it's you that's leading it.
Which is what you want to do every time you're in here.
It's you leading it.
No, Dan, no.
Have you been to a game in Dalyman Park ever? It's two more years of the old Dalyman. Have you been to a game?
That's
in
a great point.
Have you been to the old Dalyman Park, as it will be known one day? The spiritual home of Irish football. Not just League of Ireland, the spiritual home of Irish football.
It's dreadfully annoying. Let me just say I've played there but haven't been there.
Well, you have been there if you've played there.
Okay, well, I haven't watched a game there. I played.
Yeah, you played there.
Yeah.
Was it like a good game or was it?
Decent game. It's kind of underage level. Played to a reasonable level at times.
Just, no,
we don't have to get into it.
I know you did. I think you should go. You should actually get a Friday night in. But anyway, because it is a great old ground and the German lads in front of me were taking pictures the whole time, just taking a picture of the history.
Get one of the Bob Marley mural.
I'm not sure that would have been. I'm not sure if what they got or what attracted them, but it does actually happen big time. But anyway,
okay.
So I was over on a stag at the weekend
in Munich,
and you think, okay, are Bayern playing? They're not. Yeah. They were, but they're playing away from home. And you're thinking, right, 1860 Munich. They are the only other sort of senior team as such in Munich, which is sort of mad, really, when you think how many clubs might be in London and sort of other major cities. Mm. So 1860 Munich, where are they playing? They're playing at home, Sunday 12 o'clock or whatever, 1 o'clock. Perfect. Now, they're in the German, like, people would be familiar with the name 1860 Munich. You know, like, there's one of these names. I think they won the German league maybe back in the 60s. And, you know, they've been a top-tier club.
And if you told me they were still in the Bundesliga, I would have...
You would have nodded and agreed.
All day long.
I knew they weren't in the Bundesliga. I knew they'd fallen on hard times, but I didn't know how far they'd fallen, actually.
Third division.
I would have thought they would have been second division, to be honest.
Okay.
But actually, they were in the fourth division last year.
Okay.
They were in the Allianz Arena. They were previously playing in the Allianz Arena. But actually, years ago, their stake in it was bought out because they had financial issues. Mm-hmm. And they've always had, it seems, this crisis has sort of perpetually hung in the air over the last sort of two decades, basically. And Ian Eyre, who was actually at Liverpool, one of the figures at Liverpool, he temporarily went there a couple of years ago when they got relegated from the second division, but dropped to the fourth due to some, again, financial issues or irregularities. So you're thinking, so what's this going to be like? You know, it's the German third division.
Yeah.
So they're back in this ground called the Grünwalder Stadium, which was the home of Bayern Munich until 1972. And thankfully, when this crew went to the Allianz Arena, they didn't demolish it. You know, the stadium was kept for use. I'm not sure what use it was actually kept for, but it was kept for some reason or other.
So presumably Bayern played there until the 72 Olympics.
They did. They moved to the Olympic Stadium. Yeah, it was actually George Hamilton. I put up a tweet. I was at the game and George Hamilton sort of replied and made that point. Like, and he sort of knows his history of that neck of the woods very well. So yeah, Bayern moved to the Olympic Stadium and then they subsequently went to the Allianz in 1860 were there. But they've basically gone back to their like spiritual home, I guess. Or a spiritual home more to the point for like maybe football in Munich rather than necessarily for 1860, which is actually very close to the city centre, like a 10-minute taxi, whereas Allianz is a bit more of a trek, you know. So I think how many people are going to be there? And yeah, it was like basically a sellout, 15,000 crowd.
Wow.
Real old school stadium, you know. There were stands on two sides, standing terraces behind each goal, and a really sort of lively, friendly, decent atmosphere. Facilities were brilliant, you know. It's an old school stadium. Like it's what brilliant might be for someone who doesn't like new stadiums, you know, in the sense that a lot of standing around on steps. You can go in and you can have a beer. You can have it on the steps. You know, this is the thing. There's a obviously in this country, like football fans are stigmatized, so they can't have a beer during games. You know, and bring it out to the ground, whereas you can do that in a rugby game, but it doesn't happen in football games here.
You take beers out in Premier League games?
I don't think so, I have to say. I don't think so, but I'm open to correction on this.
Someone will text in, who knows.
Obviously, there's corporate hospitality, and I've been to games where you have beers, and I'm trying to think if I ever, like, have I ever watched, you've gone to the odd sort of junket where you're like watching a game in a box, you know. I'm trying to think, have I ever brought a drink outside?
It's just, I was talking to,
it's ringing a bell at me that I don't know if I have.
I was talking to a friend, because I was at Preston Rotherham, which by the way only had 11,000 in its second tier. We were just talking about that point because you certainly weren't allowed at the Preston game. And my mate was swearing blind that at Anfield, beer is sold right around the ground, plastic glasses, obviously, and you can bring it out.
Yeah,
and like swearing. I meant to double check it actually.
Well, I know that. I mean, that would be the case actually, even in the World Cup in the summer and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They would have, but it's low strength. Like seriously, low strength. It's like here's your 1%, you know, beer here. So it's tempered. Whereas in Germany, it certainly wouldn't be tempered.
What is it in Germany? 8%.
I don't know, but like, you know, it was beer anyway. And but that's by the by. But even just like, you know, toilet facilities, food, stuff like that. And there was a real mix of, at one end of the goal ground, there was like a sort of a, not quite ultras, but the more hardcore fan. And that end was packed. That was the most populous end of the ground. Our side, we were behind the other goal, and it was sort of families, kids, a few, you know, young lads as well. But just like, it was a decent game, it was 2-2, but you got the sense that, and the club has been through the mill as well, that these are people who just go all the time. I mean, I think they played in front of crowds of 60,000 at times in the Allianz Arena, so they're back here.
In the day, like,
So back here, they're getting a 15,000 crowd every week.
See, I was going to say, and I appreciate you were on a bloody stag, so you probably haven't done an academic study of these things, but I wonder, are 1860 Munich a bit of an anomaly in the third division because they've just taken such a big cohort to support with them? You know, they've taken whatever percentage of the 60,000 that were going at one stage are sort of still hanging around, and when Sonnenhof go and play back in Sonnenhof,
Aspach, I think they're from, or somewhere,
maybe they're getting 3,000.
I don't know. Their capacity stadium is 10. Actually, the only real space is in the ground. They had a small enough travelling support, and the players, it was a really nice touch after they went over afterwards. And I wouldn't see this even at games here, the extent to which the players went over and high fived all of the away supporters and talked to them and chatted to them and stuff like that. So, but it is a real, like, there's a real fan culture in Germany. I know that a couple of years back, I'm not sure about this year, the 1860 Munich season ticket was like 50 quid, I think, or something like that.
That's great.
So it's a great place to go and watch football.
David was in touch. Joe was in Anfield at the weekend. No beer allowed to your seat. I was glad of the 90-minute break of it.
Yeah, I think that would make sense, you can't bring it to your seat. Like, it's around the ground, but...
Oh, so maybe you can drink it all around the ground just outside, but just not quite to your seat.
Whereas here, like, I've only think I've ever gone to really one rugby match where... Runwood Reg full stop. It was like an Leinster game in Donnybrook where people are going off, you know, getting their rounds and bringing them back and stuff. That was the same thing at 1860. You know, lads would just head off, or women would head off and come back with their four beers in their handles, and you know, you everyone picks up their glasses afterwards and brings them back in, and you get a refund for some of your
back
your cash to avoid littering, basically. So it's just a, I mean,
you do feel, so you do feel it is a stigmatization of the football fan, like, well, you'll cause trouble, you can't possibly handle alcohol.
100%, yeah, that's 100% what. And now, I mean, there are historic instances that, you know, we can't be too sort of blasé about this. I mean, there has been trouble at games, and, you know, there would be games, you think of certain fixtures, and I'm thinking of, you know, some in, sort of intense games in England and so on, and even, you know, games here and games in places where there's been trouble around the ground, and you think, well, would this inflame the situation? But when there's proper segregation and, I don't know, a sort of a relaxed enough mentality towards it, you know, to be able to pop off to a vendor halfway through and get a couple of beers shouldn't really be a thing. And people go to sports events in America and all these places where it's just that it's a part of the thing. And it's not to say you need to do it, you know. I'm
just going to say,
It sounds like, you know, it sounds like you're being a bit, oh no, this is essential. I'm just saying that, you know, you're trying to sell like an entertainment option to people, and you're giving people the option and the choice, and not to patronise them and say you don't have a choice. Go and do what you want.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And that's the thing. But
I agree with you. You can sound like we're on a big crusade here to get drink back.
Nah, actually, like that.
Not too bothered either way. But
no, it's not that. But I mean, at the same time, it's just to say, like, I'm not saying it's anyway enhancing their experience. They couldn't go without it. It's only one aspect of it. But like, some of the teams in the German second division, when the big clubs go down, they
get how much better the League of Ireland football would look if you could get locked.
Joe.
Come on, that was a cheap one. Sorry.
It was a cheap gag.
Here, Joe was texting. Did my Erasmus in. I'm obviously just.
Oh, look, don't be looking. Don't no, stick with your slagging now. Don't.
Did my Erasmus in.
Hardcore man. He went to Preston. Look at him now. Yeah.
Did my Erasmus in Nuremberg a few years ago. Fell in love with the club. Brilliant atmosphere. The way football should be watched. £35 for a Bundesliga ticket. Ended up being relegated the year I was there. But back to the big time now. Looking forward to going back after Christmas. Teaching German in Roscommon now. Trying to create an enclave of club fans there, not having much success as of yet, but still hopeful. Can we not get the Nuremberg Massive going out in Roscommon? No, that's a shout out for Joe. He's trying to put that together.
Nuremberg Rally, maybe not. I think, like, there is just something about the culture in England and Germany, like, and actually in Scotland as well. There are just some countries where, and we can joke or whatever, it's not some debate about standard or some debate
about
the game is going to be like. It's just, this is just what you do. We might talk about Blackpool in a while, that it is just a way of life. You know,
it's interesting.
It's just ensconced in what
I know,
you do.
Totally. Look, I hear you. You're totally right. It's not about standard. Like, that argument is actually totally wrong.
It's here that argument is used.
Yeah.
And that's why we don't have a football culture here. It's in pockets.
No, it's very strange. Because I've got friends, we all love football. You know, we grew up, it's Sky Sports in the house.
Yeah.
It's Man United, Liverpool, Arsenal. You know, it's just football. All we do is play football. That's the that's the hinterland I'm coming for. We talk about football when we get together. We'll go and watch games on TV.
Yeah, of course.
There is a menu of things you might do on a Friday night in Dublin. From cinema to go to someone's house,
whatever.
To go to the pub,
to
something else, more maybe a bit more random. It has struck me as a bit funny that bar one or two exceptions, maybe two in a group of maybe 20 that I can think of, that never on the rota menu of things to do on a Friday night does anyone seem to suggest, well, we just go and watch a game.
Yeah.
And it is odd that it's not even just there as a possibility.
Yeah,
I couldn't explain it to you.
It's very hard to manufacture that as well. I would make that point. Like, you either get the bug or you don't. And I just think that naturally there are places you go where they don't have maybe the other sporting competition. Like you mentioned, I heard you speaking to Kevin going to Preston, and how, you know, and I've been to Preston to games a couple of times, and it's not dissimilar to a lot of other places in England, which wouldn't be towns that you would associate with, like, these sort of metropolis, this glamour. You know, you can go to wherever, places like Ipswich and stuff, where, you know, it can be good there on a Friday and it can be pretty dark and sort of quiet. But around that hour leading up to 3 o'clock on a Saturday or whenever it might be,
yeah,
all of a sudden these people emerge. Yeah. You know, the train stations are full, and you know, you in the middle of England, or you go in England on a Saturday, there's a train station maybe around the Midlands or Manchester area. There's fans going different ways and different games and going everywhere. And it's just a part of the habit. And you can't preach, like I always say this, you can't preach and just tell people to develop it. It's just something that they've been brought up with, and it's there and it's part of your being. And when 1860 dropped to the fourth division, I don't think there would have been a suggestion of, well, that's it, we just don't go to them anymore.
No, totally. I think now we were in Selbridge, there was no League of Ireland club.
No, that's it. Well, I also think that's a massive issue. If you haven't grown up with it around, like you could go to Dundalk now on a Friday night, say, yeah, or Sligo, or there's parts of the country where match night actually is a part of the social existence of a certain something male and female sports fan in that area, that they see crowds on a Friday night going, oh, they're off to the game.
It's an event.
Yeah.
It's just been too concentrated in Dublin. We've too many clubs in Dublin for a country the size.
Yeah, and there's huge parts of the country where people don't even identify with this debate, and you can't be given out to them, oh, why aren't you interested in it? Like, you can't tell someone from Mayo to suddenly make Galway their club in the rest of their life that, you know, Galway is a rival, you know. Okay, I know the provinces have done it to an extent in rugby, but it's a slightly... It's a slightly different thing, you know?
Connacht, they're not called Galway.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So there is that. But, I mean, I do find, like, the German approach to it is particularly good, because it's generally very cheap and accessible.
Yeah.
And the safe standing thing, more so than the booze thing around it. But actually, it's trusting fans as well, that they can create an atmosphere in an environment that, you know, it's properly monitored and well looked after, but it's sort of trusting. And I just think you see the atmospheres and the sort of scenes, because I was watching, like, you know, invariably you're sort of in bars and seeing, they're showing Bundesliga on loop, and the crowds are incredible. I mean, as I said, the crowds for some of the teams in the English lower tiers are absolutely amazing as well. Like, you know, teams like Portsmouth and stuff like that, when they were in the fourth tier, getting over 20,000 at games. It's just... It's not about the standard.
No,
it's never about the standard. Whereas here, it's always about that.
Short break. Tim Vickery is with us next.
Some of the boys are really obsessed with me, and some of them, they will wake up in the morning, as always, the first thing they think that comes to their mind is Jose Mourinho. I'm European champion, so I'm not one of the bottle. I think I'm a special one, and. I'm sorry, I'm a bit arrogant. We have a top manager. Until the moment they have a manager that wins 4 Premier Leagues for them, I'm the number one. Because when I left the club last season, I left the club in the Champions League, winning the Champions League group, qualifying to the Champions League knockout phase, playing the second leg at home with the advantage to be the champion of the group. So if they win the Champions League last year, they could be playing in Europe this season. So... It's not my fault, it's the fault that the ones that stay here and didn't win the Champions League.
3-0. Do you know what this means? 3-0. But also means 3 premierships, and I won more premierships alone than the other 19 managers together. 3 for me and 2 for them. Respect. Respect. Respect, man.
Martin Vickery in the line, evening, Tim.
Hello, hey, gentlemen, how you doing?
Good, long time no talk. So we're talking to you about interesting times with the Copa Libertadores. However, can I throw one way out of left field for you? It just strikes me now.
Throw it in.
Instantly
throw
as you're on the line.
Get it out of your system, Joe.
Why are so many, from Rivaldo to Ronaldinho to several others, very high profiles, why are they so enamoured with Brazil's new leader?
How long have you got? Brazil is going through bad times. Bad times. There is a huge problem with urban crime, and the speech of Bolsonaro, who is really he's a Cold War warrior, and the Cold War is alive and well in Brazil. He wants to clean the country of all of the communists. I have to say, I haven't found one. I can't see it. I keep looking. I can't see none of these communists. But he also wants a shoot-to-kill policy from the police. He says the policeman who doesn't kill is not a proper policeman. So it's a simple solution to a huge problem. And this is a country which at the moment is baying for blood. Now, over recent months, Bolsonaro's extreme right-wing speech
has become normalised. I mean, there's all sorts of examples of his misogyny and his homophobia and so on. But mainly that idea of the only good criminal is a dead criminal, that's one that has serious traction in Brazilian society. So that, I think, is the main reason. Now, they're coming off a severe economic recession, a huge corruption scandal, which plenty of blame has been and rightly so, levelled at the left-leaning Workers' Party, who were his principal opposition in this election. And there's also the issue of social conservatism. The huge progress has been made here in recent years on issues of diversity, on women's rights, lesbian and gay rights. Now it's pushback time. And Bolsonaro, his explicit aim is to kind of recreate, if you like, a little bit like the villain in the recent Kingsman film, you know, to recreate a kind of kitsch 1950s where everyone knew their place and homosexuals didn't go around kissing openly in the street. If they do that, they deserve a beating, says Mr. Bolsonaro. And you have to remember that the atmosphere of football in Brazil is quasi-militaristic. It's very, very socially conservative. And look at Brazil's youth sides. They're under 17 side, they're under 20 side. They almost look like military cadets. You know, people have the image of the long hair and the earrings. You can't do that on the way up. You can't do it. You know, you've got to earn the right to have a little bit of individuality. It's a very socially conservative environment. So I think there are a number of reasons for this, on the face of it, surprising option for someone who doesn't really offer poor Brazilians very much, apart from they hope, I disagree, but they hope, a solution to the law and order problem.
Okay, grim times indeed.
Yeah, and I've been here for more than 24 years, and for the majority of that time, you could cling to the belief that things were getting better. By hook and by crook, things were getting better. The last two or three years, that has gone out of the window. And people in desperate times, people look for easy solutions, desperate solutions, and that's effectively what they've done with Bolsonaro now. So interesting times, horrific times from a journalistic point of view. Very interesting times indeed.
Mm. Yeah, because it's funny. Myself and Joe were both there for the World Cup, so there would have been a lot of focus, obviously, on the. I suppose the social aspect around the country at the time. And you mentioned the corruption issues there and how maybe the public mood has sort of switched against, I suppose, the people that were there before. Is the World Cup and the Olympics and the spend on those events and all the stuff around that, is that almost a factor in it in some way?
I think it's a huge factor. I think this particular moment in Brazil started in 2013. You remember those demonstrations during the Confederations Cup?
Yeah.
Which suddenly took hold of the country. Millions and millions out on the streets and leaving the authorities absolutely perplexed. What happened there, I think, and this I think is very clear in retrospect, that was the breakdown of the kind of cross-class alliance you need if you want to implant a welfare state, which the Workers' Party had been timidly trying to do. Got to get middle class people on board as well, because they're the ones who are having the tax bill. So the big protest there in 2013 was against state services. And this is the moment when the middle class break away and become more authoritarian. The big slogan that was used at the time of those street demonstrations, my political party is Brazil. That's Brazil above all political parties. Now, it seemed on the face of it at the time innocent enough, but really that's a fascist slogan, because inside that Brazil, there are lots and lots of different schools of thought, but suddenly fewer of them are allowed. And that slogan, you know, my party is Brazil, Bolsonaro has taken over that slogan. So that's big for him. You know, my party is Brazil. Brazil above everyone. Brazil is bigger than all of us. God above this. And we're already seeing teachers now under threats. There's a proposal that one politician has just put forward for all lessons to be filmed. So if there's any danger of teachers indoctrinating their kids with left-wing ideology, you've got proof there. The bully boy intimidation is already out on the streets, and Bolsonaro doesn't get sworn in until next January.
Okay. tangent over with. I suspect we may come back to that at some stage with you. But the Copa Libertadores, we're into the final stages, semi-final done completely on one end of the draw and second leg of the other semi-final to come. I was reading just 2 years ago, and you know, I'm sure people are aware this is kind of the South American Champions League. We had Nacional of Colombia against a very small team from Ecuador in the final. Mm. It seems Brazil and Argentina are reclaiming some control here.
Yeah, certainly. And there's an easy explanation for this. Up until 2 years ago, the Libertadores was squeezed into one half of the year. From last year, it was extended. So it now starts at the end of January and it goes all the way through to the end of November. The longer the timescale, the better things are for the wealthier clubs.
Yeah.
Because you can keep changing your squad during the course of the competition. And also, in the reorganisation last year, Brazil and Argentina were given more slots. So last year, we had a final between one club from Brazil and one club from Argentina. And this time, and seven of the last eight were from Brazil or Argentina. And both the finalists are, at the moment, the smart money is on a Boca versus River. Although Palmeiras of Brazil will have plenty to say about that in a few hours' time.
Yeah, with Luis Felipe Scolari managing them, if people are wondering where he has ended up. I presume River Plate and Boca don't love each other?
No, in fact, I feel a little bit sorry for them if that's the way it comes out. Because, and this will be huge, this will be absolutely huge. And whoever loses this will never, ever be allowed to forget it. In 30 years' time, that will still be thrown down the faces of whoever loses in a final. So just to sum up the situation, the semi-finals completed tonight. Palmeiras lost 2-0 away to Boca Juniors last week. Two goals right at the end. It's very, you know, it's Scolari ball. So it's very, very cautious counter-attack, and they seem to have the thing under control, and the wheels came off right at the end and they conceded two goals. Now, this puts them tonight in a situation that they've never been in before. Before, in every previous round, they won the first leg 2-0 away. So at home, it was just administering. Now, they've got to abandon Scolari ball. They've got to go out and if the away goals rule is in effect, so if they concede one, they've got to score four. So it's going to be really interesting to see if Palmeiras can pull that one off. Probably in South America's most impressive new stadium, the setting will be magnificent, as it was last night in Gremio's new stadium, where we had a little bit of fireworks and plenty of drama right at the end.
Yes.
Yeah, what was that drama at the end? It sort of unfolded dramatically enough, I think, Tim.
Yeah, well, Gremio had won the first leg away, 1-0. So they're in that position, which I think can be an awkward position. What do you do at home? Do you stick or do you twist? And in the first half, they were absolutely terrible. They didn't even deserve nil. They got one, kind of deflected goal. River could have scored three, couldn't get any. So at that point, Gremio are 2-0 up on aggregate, and you think they're coasting. And in fact, they're much, much better in the second half. They have a chance to put the whole thing to bed. Don't take it. And then they go negative. The time wasting. The ball boys disappear, so the ball's not coming back. They're going down with cramp, trying to waste as much time as possible. Every time the goalkeeper's called upon, it's 5 minutes rolling on the ground. And they are negative. And there are dangers in that, especially, gentlemen, now that VAR has been introduced. One clear consequence I think we're seeing here is defending close to your own goal can be dangerous with VAR. So just inside the last 10 minutes, River got one goal. Now, it seems, although I don't think anyone picked up on this at the time, that it may have glanced off the striker's arm. But no one saw that, not even the VAR referee. So that one stands. And then just a few minutes later, River Plate think they have a corner. They're happy with a corner. It's a shot blocked and it goes off behind the goal for a corner. But hang on a minute. The VAR referee has spotted it. And you look at the images, and really there's not a great deal of doubt about it. And even Gremio had no real complaints with the fact that a penalty was given because it was handball. It was blocked by the centre-back there with an arm outstretched. By today's criteria, that's a penalty. It was also, which I thought was very, very harsh, a second yellow card for the fellow who blocked it with his hand. So he's sent off. Now, at this point, if that penalty is converted, Gremio are out unless they can score a goal. Time is, we're already getting into stoppage time now. So what don't you want to do if you're Gremio? Well, what you don't want to do is spend 20 minutes arguing about it, because it's just going to eat into the time that you have to score the goal if the penalty is converted. But try telling that to Gremio, especially Bressan, the player who got sent off, because he made repeated attempts to try and get his hands on the referee, and he kept on being forced back, and the riot police are on, and it took forever and ever and ever. In the end, I think we went to 13 minutes of stoppage time, yeah. But that still didn't make up everything that we'd lost. But Gremio had lost their opportunity by then, so that they crash out. So we've got half of a River Boca, River Plate already through. We will see in a few hours' time if Boca join them or if Palmeiras can pull off a comeback.
Okay, excellent. Well, let's catch up before the final then.
Look forward to it. First leg next week, second leg after the FIFA dates at the end of the month.
Perfect. Tim Vickery, pleasure as always. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Cheers.
Tim Vickery with us there. It's just gone full time at Stamford Bridge, by the way. Chelsea 3, Derby 2. And Frank Lampard is taking his applause from the Stamford Bridge faithful.
Derby hit the post right at the end as well to go 3-3, yeah.
Elsewhere, Arsenal 2-1 up on Blackpool, that won just a bit to go full time. And Spurs, heavy schedule at the moment, 3-1 winners away to West Ham. Middlesbrough 1-0 up on Crystal Palace in the Carabao Cup this evening. We'll take a short break. Keith Andrews on the way. Daniel, thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Remember lying back, pillows on me bed late after, looking at the top of my wardrobe, stacked with boxes of Morro bars, Batch Loaf, not the heels. And butter's another thing. Over the last couple of years, I've gone back, because I wouldn't have tasted butter for about 15, 20 years. Yeah, bread. Bread was a big thing for me when I went over to England. I missed it. Vienna rolls.
Toast.
I have rings of pudding used to, sausages my ma used to, they used to be packed in the luggage compartment on a...
Surely they did sausages as well.
Right now.
English sausages would
have been... Their Irish recipe, which is a... Nowhere near, is it?
I've had sausages of, Grim Stag Weekend over in the UK, and they've tasted okay, no?
If they're sausages in a Grim Stag Weekend, Joe. You want to be able to savour the sausage.
Ma bring back the batch cut a big heel, open up, eat the heel, flip it over, go for the heel down the bottom, wrap it back up again, flip it back over, put it back in the bread bin so nobody's aware of it until they dug down right at the end. Although there's something nice about toast, putting the butter, if a cold slab of butter on top and just watching it work its way across the toast slowly.
So true.
As God intended. No, just Vienna rolls, that fresh bread, not going to the Super Queen, the bread coming out, breathe it in.
Andrew, welcome back. So, football show is coming to a close. However, get excited because Keith Andrews is here.
Good evening, Joseph.
How you doing? How's I'm things? Good. You well?
Very well.
Thanks
very
for
well.
Popping in. I've nabbed you. So, I want to put this to you. Matt Doherty, Player of the Month in the Premier League, has just done an interview today with the Daily Mail, effectively talking about how he has lost weight. So, you would think that, Doherty might have had an issue with putting on weight, whereby he had a bad metabolism or some issues like that. It turns out that he had to ditch the microwavable dinners, pasta, fizzy drinks, almost non-stop fizzy drinks, and sweets. No good. He's talked about his first meeting with Santo, the manager. He asked me what was my body fat. That's a great first question. You're worried if you're being asked that. He obviously knew it was really high. Everybody was coming in wearing t-shirts. I was wearing a jumper. So he says that was June 2017. So it's amazing how recently this is. Last year. Doherty reckons he weighed 89 kilos, equivalent to 14 stone, is what he was carrying around. And he reckons at his heaviest, he was 91, 92. He says, I must have been a pudding. You kind of expected him to say, I had some issues or I was eating largely well. But it seems like Matt Doherty had made it to almost Premier League level by eating microwavable meals, fizzy drinks, sweets, non-stop pasta. It's just amazing that this is going on. I thought everything would be perfect.
Yeah, look, I think when you look at him and you look at clips of him, photographs of him, championship time 2 years ago, I think it's fairly obvious. And I think it's obvious on certain players that they can lose weight. Mm. Like the football clubs can only do so much. It's what you're doing at home. And it's obviously from an earlier age how well you educate those young players. Mm. I remember when I was, like I've spoke to you before about my early days.
Your fat phase.
Yeah, and I was. And even when I was going through a good place in terms of where I was in my football and trying to be professional, it was the education side of it. where I was eating like a lasagna at 10 o'clock at night, thinking I'm being good here.
Because you're having some pasta and some carbs.
Hello. Sits on you all night, just turns into fat. Not what you should be eating at 10 o'clock at night. But microwave meals at the level he's at is just ridiculous. I think the way it's transformed in the last 10 to 15 years. But I just spoke to you about Ross Barkley, Luke Shaw.
Yeah.
They're two players' prime examples.
Shaw said the same thing. After Shaw said the same thing. He was asked, how have you lost weight? Yeah. He was sort of defending himself. He was saying, look, I'm a Wayne Rooney body type. I'm sure Wayne Rooney was like, thanks, mate.
Yeah, cheers.
Yeah. I'm byword for overweight now, says Wayne Rooney. So he said, I have a Wayne Rooney body weight. And he was talking about how, again, he said fizzy drinks. These lads are just knocking back Coca-Cola the whole time. Fizzy drinks and sweets and pizza and not sleeping enough, interestingly.
Yeah.
He said he wasn't getting enough sleep, which contributed to his weight situation.
And this is Manchester United, Joe. Staggering. There's a World Cup that he should have been playing in over the summer that he missed out on because of him not being professional.
Yeah. Was it prevalent? I mean, were you looking at guys who were sipping Coke at the training ground and eating sweets at the training ground, or did players almost behave themselves at the training ground and then it was outside of...
Yeah, you know what certain players do. So everybody has vices, don't they?
Mm.
Mine would have been ice cream. I used to love a bit of ice cream. And even when I was being really good, that would have been one of the things. I remember this protein ice cream came out. I was just like, oh my God. This is unbelievable.
Get me a sponsorship deal.
Yeah, it was quality. But like, you know what certain players are like on the bus, at the back of the bus. They'll sneak things into their bags. And some people get away with it because they have that type of frame. Other players less so. They have to be really stringent in terms of what they put in their body.
I was wondering about that. So I would presume you training very hard across the day in the gym, and then you're training on the pitch of a given day. And if you have porridge and eggs for breakfast and a reasonably healthy lunch and an okay dinner at 6 or 7 o'clock, I would presume at Premier League level, average metabolism, you could, along with those three decent meals a day, have a bar of chocolate a day and a bag of crisps a day. Would that cost you?
I think you'd get away with that.
Yeah, I would too.
But I think the amount of calories that you consume, even the good calories that they're ploughing into you, especially when it got towards Thursday, Friday, going towards the game on the Saturday, the carb loading, you might have heard that term.
Yeah.
It's like phenomenal. So your calorie intake would be big.
Mm.
You're not going to burn all those calories off on the Saturday afternoon. But what you do is you put your body in a position to be able to deal with that load that your body's going to go through. But the bad stuff, obviously if you're taking those on a daily basis, it's obviously going to clock up. And especially then, what I found as well, when you got injured, you have to curb that because obviously you're not doing it. And especially at a stage of your injury where you can't even get a sweat on, you're literally just doing rehab.
Yeah.
Obviously you have to curb that right in. But when your body's used to consuming 3,000-4,000 calories a day, whether it's good stuff or not, that's a big decrease.
Big job,
and you've got to do it.
Because he was saying he sat beside a fella in the dressing room. This is what made me think of you,
Danny
actually.
Danny Bath. Big him up. What does he do, Joe?
He's a vegan.
Boom.
I thought maybe I'll try that. I got leaner and I'm in the best shape I've ever been. 86.5. He's down from an all-time high of 92 to 86.5 because Danny Bath is a vegan. Although he does say he can't resist a few prawns.
Yeah.
But other than that, he's pretty much vegan. Keith, you went vegan a while back.
I did, and I turned into Skeletor.
You lost a lot of weight for a man who didn't have much to lose.
Too much weight, so.
Yeah.
Hector Bellerin as well, doesn't he?
Mm.
Aguero.
If you were back being a footballer, would you think about being vegan?
Possibly. I'd be more open-minded to it. You'd have to start it in the off-season because it does have obviously a negative effect initially where you get withdrawal symptoms of certain things.
Okay.
But no, I don't. Look, it's each to their own.
You went too skinny, though.
I did go too skinny, and I was troughing. I mean, were I you? Was... eating loads.
Okay.
But literally was just getting too skinny. So
what were you eating lots of? What were the things you were throwing into yourself a lot each day?
Pastas, brown pastas.
Okay,
whole
that's
pastas.
Fine. If you're eating lots of pasta, you should be putting on weight.
I know. But this is the thing, Joe. I need to be careful.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You were knocking back pasta.
Loads.
And kept losing weight.
Traveling when I was going off to England on weekends and things like that. Bring it with me. Like,
I would have thought if you're not exercising
much,
or certainly as much as you used to, I don't know what you're doing, and you're necking back a load of pasta.
Yeah.
I would have thought you should be.
It must have been, I don't know, it's, piling on,
And you lost weight.
Lost weight, yeah.
The body is still a mystery to us. Nutrition is still a bit of a mystery to us. I'm sure you saw all the fads. Are they still eating loads of pasta? Because in rugby, they've gone away from a lot of that stuff.
The timing of the week, it's in and around the games. I mentioned about the lasagna, 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
No need for it. During the week, certain training days and the level of detail to go into. If it's a recovery day, that's when you back off. And I think okay. most clubs, international teams, whatever, after a game, you'll be allowed that window of opportunity to have an apple pie and ice cream or whatever it is.
They all have pizza in the dressing room after games.
Yeah, a lot of them do because they need to
get the carbs in.
Yeah, and after, you'll find as well with athletes, and I don't know whether it's the same across the board, but certainly football, it's a very difficult eat after a game because you just don't feel it.
Your stomach sort of tightens
yeah,
up,
yeah, you
it?
Don't yeah. feel like eating, so you've no real appetite, but that's the most crucial period to get goodness back into your body. Now, pizza obviously isn't what you would ideally want, but at least it's getting something back into your body to start the ball rolling with the recovery. Obviously, protein shakes would come into that massively yeah. a lot easier. So the fitness coach would be going around trying to push this in the hour to two post-playing and post-training. That's when the shakes come on board yeah. really quickly afterwards to get the rejuvenation happening.
I remember reading in Roy Keane's book, he was saying what you eat the day before the game is more important even than
in the day yeah.
on the day of.
Yeah. Well, Glenn Hoddle was my manager, and obviously I wish him the best in his recovery. I think he's a little bit out of the
I think
the
he's
woods,
out of intensive
he?
Care. Yeah, it's so the latest.
That's good news. I remember when he was manager of Wolves, he came over and the day of the game, I didn't like eating a lot. I didn't like to feel heavy and yeah. full, you know. So I was just having a bowl of, I think I used to eat Shreddies at this stage. I was about 23, 24. And Glenn Hoddle came over to me.
So you say 13 or 14? Oh, 23 or 24.
Shreddies. Did I say 13 or 14?
Shreddies. Yeah. Okay, great.
Very good. Do you not like Shreddies?
Well,
I haven't had them since then, but I had a little phase. I'm okay. a bit of a creature of habit.
Okay.
Came over and his plate, he was managing obviously, his plate was piled. And he was seeing me with this bowl of Shreddies. He was like, is that all you're having?
Hmm.
And I was like, yeah, I don't really eat a lot. He goes, oh, you need to be getting a steak in, you need to be getting this, you need to be getting pasta. Because obviously that's the way he
yes.
got brought. He would have a fillet steak or a sirloin steak on the day of the game when yeah. he was playing. But he had got a wand.
In fairness, he could eat what he wants. He can have a chipper yeah. the day, morning of the game.
I need to just get around the pitch. Yeah, more yeah. needed.
And did you break that habit? Did you have to start eating more on the day of a game? Or did you keep that habit your career?
No, I didn't eat a lot the day of a game. The more I became educated, it would be Thursday, Friday, especially okay. Friday. Porridge, pastas, rice, whatever. Certain types of protein into the body, and yeah, I think it's just education, though, isn't it?
I know it's just
habits.
You would, I mean, none of it is complicated. It's just striking when you think we're in an age where no stone is left unturned. Mm. Attention to detail is everywhere, and these are multi-million pound assets. If you want to be brutal about it,
but look at the fine line that's making in his career.
I was just about to say the difference it makes. Ross Barkley,
phenomenal,
unbelievable.
Ross Barkley now is in the phase of. He's definitely nailed on at Chelsea. He's probably going to get a new contract if he keeps his type of form up. He's nailing a place down with England.
Yeah.
On the flip side, last year, he goes from a Chelsea to... Who does he go to? A Bournemouth or a mid-table club? That's where his career was heading.
Mm.
Whereas now, that side of the game, he's looking after. He's clearly doing things very, very well off the pitch, living his life right.
Mm.
And look at the benefits. The fine margin. Matt Doherty, another prime example.
Between millions of pounds for the rest yeah. of your life and your future and your family's future and all that stuff.
Staggering, isn't it?
All for just dodging that bar of chocolate yeah. and having a salad instead of...
Like I'm saying about education, the clubs, and we're talking about Luke Shaw, Man United, yeah. Chelsea, Everton, where Barkley was, Wolves. But... ultimately, it comes down to the player.
I mean, education, you know, to a point, right?
To a point.
If Luke Shaw was having pasta late at night, you say, okay, fine, maybe lay off that a bit. Yeah. But Luke Shaw was talking about Coke, sweets,
I think
pizza.
He was living on Haribo's, wasn't he?
Yeah, he loved the sweets. Yeah. So,
and I think Barkley was the same. I think Barkley maybe was a bit of a, like the nightlife, and then he's curbed that down. This is what it means to me. Look at the opportunity I have at this type of club.
Yeah.
Obviously, everybody points to the manager, the way that's gone and the style of play. Doesn't get into the team if he doesn't back in pre-season in
yeah.
peak yeah. condition. Which he did. That's yeah. why he got his opportunity.
Yeah. So it's education, but it's actually also.
Yeah.
I think if you went ownership. Up to Luke Shaw and said, you know, Harry Bauer aren't good for you, I don't think it would have blown his mind.
Do you not think?
I think he's like, yeah, no, I figured that, but I like them.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them just think they'll get away with it. Maybe it's only when you do what Doherty has done or Barkley or maybe Shaw now and actually try out the healthy living for a year, 18 months, you see the benefits.
Yeah.
Maybe it's only then you look back and go, wow, I was actually so sluggish and weighing myself down almost.
But it's not even just the weight and the body fat aspect of it as well. It's the sharpness. It's the ability for your body to do more. Not just about whether you're 10% body fat or 14% body fat.
Mm.
You know, you can get by. And Matt Doherty, no problem getting by. Championship level, because he's a really good player.
Yeah.
And he's getting old. He's getting lots of game under his belt. Experience-wise, not a factor. But in terms of that explosiveness that he needs to play in that particular position, he needs to be in peak condition.
Mm.
And he's clearly there.
Yeah, he's done it. One last very quick one. We talk about it tomorrow on your Keith Andrews Football Show, which streams at
half 12.
We briefly just touched, I was over at Preston Rotherham. I was just looking at Richie Towell, and yeah, I've always sort of looked at Richie Towell. I'd say his body fat percentage is very impressive. Mm. He's clearly very fit. And I still look at him and wonder, is he just too heavy? Does he just have too much muscle, particularly in his upper body, or does he need that? Because he looks to me really built. Compared to you, for instance, or a lot of the top lads, top players now just look incredibly lean and skinny. Yeah. And you meet them in person, they're so lean and small, a lot of them.
Well, a lot of the fitness coaches, the better fitness coaches I would have worked with, would have had this phrase, no beach weights in the gym. So if they see anybody in the gym doing pull-ups, you know, dumbbells, curls, bench press, forget about it. That is not benefiting your game. Okay. That is literally just for the beach.
Your biceps is not important in football.
No, of course it's not. Yeah. It's about being lean. I think that you've hit the nail on that. I always wanted to be lean and as strong as I could, core-wise and lean, because the big part of my game was getting around the pitch. Mm. So I didn't want that to restrict me. Mm. And I don't know what he does, I know he takes care of himself really well.
See, it's a completely different issue to what Donnelly and Barkley were talking about.
You go back to the start of last season when he had injury troubles at Brighton. In the close season when he was building up and everyone else was having their time off, I know for a fact he was doing above and beyond what he should have been doing because he wanted to make an impact at Brighton. And he did too much. So I don't know whether that's an issue in it. And I know for a fact his hunger to succeed is through the roof. But like I said, I don't know what he's doing.
I don't want to talk too much about him specifically because it's actually a bit unfair and he could turn around and say, well, I've talked to a nutritionist and various people and they said I'm perfect. Yeah. You know, it's just a visual thing. You look at him, I just thought he looked more built up than lads are these days, you know. Anyway, thanks a million for popping in.
Pleasure.
Keith Andrews Show tomorrow, 12:30, Facebook, social media, and then podcast is available as well.
Everywhere.
He's everywhere. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow. We're pretty much done for now. OTBAM is back tomorrow, 7:45. And then we're back here at 7 o'clock, usual time. John Giles will be on. See you then. Bye-bye.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.